but that's the old me. Shouting out of my window, throw down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day, whether you are listening live here Saturday on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you're catching us on the podcast version of the show. Either way, hope you're having a great day. Hope to make your day even a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. And hey, if you are listening on Saturday and you haven't already come out to Splash City Adventures in Pensacola and joined us for Pensacon Day at Splash City Adventures, come on out. You've still got a few hours left. You can come out and enjoy the rides and take part in some giveaways and just kind of, you know, celebrate. It's Pensacon's way of saying thank you to the community for the support. And we would love to see you out there. I will be out there all day long. So if you, for some reason, have just had a burning desire to meet me, now's your chance. I don't know why you would want to do such a thing to yourself, but, you know, hey, I'm there for you if you do. And somebody else that's here for you and here for me so very often. We appreciate him being here as he is so very often. Please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Thank you so much for having me. I got to get it in while I have an opportunity and say that John Cena's heel turn was monumental and completely awesome. And I was wondering, because both you and I are big John Cena fans, but historically not so much in the context of wrestling. Do you got any take on Cena as a bad guy versus a good, as opposed to a good guy in the WWE?
I didn't see it because he's invisible.
Oh, you have got no idea how perfectly that plays into his promo.
I'm sure it does. Now, I you know, Cena's been a bad guy in movies before. You know, let's be honest. You know, his best role is probably Peacemaker. Peacemaker was kind of an antagonist in the Suicide Squad, and he is at the very least an anti-hero. You know, he's not a like a stand-up, you know, superhero kind of dude. He was definitely an antagonist in the first Fast and Furious movie he was in. And of course, like every Fast and Furious antagonist, he eventually becomes an ally because that's just how that series works. It's like, I'm just waiting to see how like Jason Momoa is going to become their buddy in the next one. You know, it's it's pretty much a given. It's you know,
yeah.
And then it'll be part of the family. They'll get together for a barbecue and have some Coronas and you know, 'cause that is pretty much. Have I just summed up every Fast and Furious movie?
Yes, you have.
I think I have. So you know, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, if you think back historically throughout the history of like professional wrestlers who've crossed over to mainstream stardom, and there's not that many, to be honest. I mean, like if you go back to the 80s and you say, oh, Hulk Hogan or Piper or Andre. I mean, yeah, kind of, but not on the level that, you know, Dwayne Johnson or John Cena or Dave Bautista have.
I think that's it. I think those are the three guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's others that have, you know, done respectably, but those are the ones. Those are the guys that have actually parlayed a wrestling career into a real legitimate Hollywood career.
Yeah.
You know, that isn't just, you know, hey, he's the heavy in this one movie or whatever like that, or he's not, you know, he's the suburban commando, you know, he's the, it's funny. Look at the, Danny with muscles, you know?
Yeah.
No, I mean, like these guys are legit at this point. I think they're legit actors. They're legit, you know, box office draws and, or critically acclaimed. I mean, look at Bautista, man. I think Bautista's career is incredibly impressive. And he's done it without going back and forth to WWE too. He finished at WWE. He's all right, I'm done. And he hasn't done this, you know, like Cena and The Rock, where they go back and forth, you know, and Cena, in fairness, Cena never really left.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Dwayne Johnson where he's walked away and come back, walked away and come back. Cena has stayed in the WWE all this time. Now he's leading up to retiring. So it remains to be seen whether he's going to be Bautista or he's going to be Johnson. But I think that that Cena has also kind of started to get a little more acting cred than Johnson has too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I feel like that.
Like Johnson is the big popcorn star. Johnson is the big, like, basically speaking, is kind of the preeminent popcorn movie star right now. Mm-hmm. He is Schwarzenegger in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
Like to a big extent. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. And he's made a couple things here and there where he's tried for some critical acclaim that haven't quite worked out. He's going to be in a Scorsese thing coming up here.
So I'm definitely interested in that.
We'll see if that gets him somewhere. But he has been, he seems like he's been pretty happy to just be the popcorn movie dude. And that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. You can have a great career like that, and you can be a well-respected actor and have great career longevity, and he kind of has already.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about how long has it been since The Scorpion King?
20 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's a very respectable career. There's nothing to, no slide against Dwayne Johnson here at all. I think Dave Bautista has done this interesting thing where, yeah, he's done the action movies and stuff like that, and he's been in a lot of big, like, sci-fi fantasy movies, of course, Marvel Cinematic Universe, things like Blade Runner 2025 and the Denis Villeneuve Dune movies. But mm-hmm. he also takes a lot of small roles in a lot of art films. Like, you know, he showed up in The Last Showgirl, and, you know, he showed up in a lot of stuff like that, and in stuff that doesn't necessarily require him to be the tough guy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even arguably the M. Night Shyamalan movie, which I didn't really care for, what was it, Knock at the Cabin?
Was very good in it.
He's very good in it, but that role does not require him to be the tough guy. Like, he's built
Absolutely.
Because he's built, but that's not what the character is.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think Bautista's had the most interesting career, and I think he's had the most critical acclaim. And I think that Cena's kind of in the middle ground there. Like, he's done a
Absolutely.
Lot of stuff where he's been well received, even if the movie or the show hasn't been well received. And he's done stuff that's popcorn fare, but he's also done stuff that's a little more, for lack of a better term, highfalutin. He also still continues to, like, just be a pop culture presence. Like, he's in that weird middle ground between Bautista and Johnson, because he still does things like host Wipeout.
Yeah. You
know, that I think people forget that that's out there. But yeah, I mean, John Cena's still hosting Wipeout. He's in this movie that we're going to talk about a little later that's been, you know, a subject of a whole lot of angst and debate over whether it's ever going to get released, that apparently is a pretty good movie, despite being kind of popcorn fare. So, like, I could see Cena continuing to go along this route and either being Dwayne Johnson or being Dave Bautista. And I hope he goes a little more towards Dave Bautista, because I think he's got the chops.
Isn't that the sweet spot, though, is to kind of exist in both of those worlds?
Oh, sure.
Just swerve. It was actually The Rock that made Cena turn heel, which is an interesting little wrinkle in this conversation that we're having. Like, he's becoming The Rock's champion, essentially. So, like, there's some weird kind of meta worlds crossing here. I'm interested to see how it plays out. But yeah, you're right about the difference between the extremes being Johnson and Bautista, and then Cena kind of being right in the middle.
But if you're asking me if I think that him doing a heel turn in the WWE is going to affect his box office career, nah. I think that the audience for the WWE is so niche, and I think they also understand kayfabe for the most part. I mean, there's definitely a segment of that audience that doesn't understand kayfabe. And if you don't know what kayfabe is the false personas that these people put on as part of wrestling. That isn't actually
it's
who
acting.
They are. Yeah. It's the dramatic storylines of wrestling versus the actual physicality of it. I don't think it affects his long-term career at all. I think it's, you know, it's fun for those that follow wrestling, and that's about it. We're going to take a break. Yeah. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Does anyone have any? Can I play? Does anyone have any? For hours, the things that I like. Please don't move, baby, stay right here. Stay right in my sight. I don't mind if you turn your back on me, cause I know you're still good. Even if I wanna turn in mine, in this position I don't think I could.
36.
Always dreamed of your measurements in neon light.
24.
Personally speaking, baby, you can light up my room and brighten up my nights.
36.
I never had a girl before with much of a figure. So excuse me if I start to play with your digital display. Wish your grief would start to grow. To make it, did just wanna show.
Digital,
I could cool you off all day.
Digital,
on a digital display.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Digging way back in the vaults for that one, man. Digital display by Ready for the World. I bet you there aren't 10 people in the world that remember that song.
I don't know it, but man, I liked it.
Ready for the World, their best known hit was definitely a song called Oh Sheila, which came out in 1985. It was a number one hit. It's very much, you can hear just by listening to that, they were very much like, hey, we've heard Prince.
Yeah.
So that was the follow-up single, Digital Display, which was a hit. They were not a one-hit wonder. That was a hit number 21 on the Billboard pop charts in 1985. That was their follow-up to Oh Sheila. They did actually have another top 10 the next year, a song called Love You Down, which you probably remember too. But I don't think a whole lot of people, I can't tell you, it's probably been, if I've heard that song in the last 30 years, I'm astonished. And
there's a newer act called Chromeo that came out probably like 2014.
Yeah,
maybe,
I know Chromeo.
A couple of years. Mm-hmm. Very similar sound.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that a little bit. I don't know why that song popped in my head, but it did, because I was looking for something. We're going to kind of talk about the overall state of current digital entertainment technology. And what I really mean is streaming. And what I really mean is video streaming more than anything else, which, you know, again, you look at it on a digital display. So, hey, there we go. It all ties together. But I don't know why that song popped into my head, man. I promise you, I probably have not heard that song in at least 30 years. Probably more than.
I was about to ask what's the tie-in between the two things, but we don't have to focus too much on that.
Yeah, I mean, like easily, like I doubt I've heard that song since the 80s. So more than 30 years, but yeah, you know, it's just weird. The connections that your mind makes. I'm usually pretty good. I actually had to look up like, all right, I remember this song. Who was that? I was Ready for the World. I actually had to look it up. Anyway, I digress significantly. But I kind of wanted to talk about what we're all watching or not watching on our digital displays and where this world seems to be going. Because we're in this weird situation now where all of these big companies invested heavily in streaming and they've had varying returns. And we could talk a little bit about what's working and what's not working, and I think we will. But where I kind of wanted to start with this is something we alluded to in the intro there. John Cena's in a movie called Coyote versus Acme that is one of several movies that was greenlit by Warner Brothers to be made for the Max streaming service. at the time HBO Max, that they decided, oh, no, wait, we don't want to do that. We're just going to scrap the entire movie and take a tax write-off. You know, most famously, Batgirl, which was like 90% done. They did that with, but they also had a Scooby-Doo movie that was a sequel to the movie Scoob that came out a few years ago, which was a fairly successful movie. It was a Christmas movie. They trashed that. But the interesting development that's been going on, there's been a lot of fighting over this movie in particular because some people have seen it and they've said it's really good and that people have really wanted to see this. And not only that, it's co-written by James Gunn, who is, you know, the guy that's driving the entire DC film slate for Warner Brothers, who has, in my opinion, never written a bad film. You know, he's a heck of a writer, and he's shown, you know, good, he's done some good writing with animated characters from the Warner Brothers family before, in that he wrote the two live action Scooby-Doo movies, which we can debate on how good those movies are or not, but the problems with those movies are not the scripts. Both of those movies have some good ideas in there. The director, that's another story, but the, you know, entertaining screenplays, I think. So to backtrack a little bit, another one of these movies that they did this situation with is a movie that is actually currently in theaters. It's called The Day the World Blew Up, or The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie. And this is, as the title would suggest, an animated Looney Tunes movie that they greenlit, that they completely made for Max, and then they backed off of. And it was one of those ones where they were just going to put it on the shelf, and I guess they're going to take a tax write-off. But then this this up-and-coming distributor called Ketchup Entertainment made them an offer, bought all rights to the film, and put it out there in theaters. And lo and behold, it's getting great reviews, and it's making a little bit of money. You know, is it setting the world on fire? No, but right now we're in kind of a lull period where nothing's setting the world on fire monetarily at the box office. And, it was originally looked like it was going to be just like a very limited release to like advance to it coming out on streaming and home video and everything. But they've held it into theaters because it's making some money. And again, getting good reviews. So now this same distributor has gone back to Warner Brothers and said, "Hey, we want to buy Coyote versus Acme." So we might actually get to see this movie come out. So what do you think about that? First of all, Jeremy. First of all, the there's a couple of different things here. The fact that Warner Brothers does not know what to do with Looney Tunes is a problem. This is one of the crown jewels of like all of entertainment. Like these characters are iconic and they've been around for what, 85 years? You know, these are characters that are instantly recognizable around the world. And Warner Brothers does not know what to do with them. Warner Brothers, the company that developed these characters, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, Wile E. Coyote, Roadrunner. You know, I mean, these are icons, Sylvester and Tweety, and they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for a long time, Bugs was to Warner Brothers what Mickey is to Disney.
Still is.
And it's, I totally agree. I wonder about to a current generation. I can only speak to my experience and you know, more broadly to your experience, where, like, we grew up with these characters. And there is the park synergy aspect of it as well, like Six Flags. Mm-hmm. They were also kind of the mascots of Six Flags. And so when you say that there's an animated movie coming up with these characters, what may surprise a lot of people and what I totally love about it is we're talking traditional 2D classic animation, the same kind we grew up loving. This isn't like 3D renders of them taken up to the kind of Disney Pixar direction. This is like classically animated, 2D, beloved characters. I love that they are at least trying to do something with them. And, you know, it's an interesting choice that this company's making because you're right, $4 million is more than no dollars, but it is against a $16 million budget. So as of right now, strictly in terms of theatrical, it is still operating at a loss. However,
but
if
it's
it
not
goes on
because,
to have longevity.
But it's not for Warner Brothers because they sold it off. And the fact that Warner Brothers does not know how to, apparently they know now, they know how to make a decent Looney Tunes movies, because both of these movies, according to the people that have seen them, are good movies.
Yeah,
that are true to the spirit of Looney Tunes, maybe more so than you know what they did put out. What was it, a couple years ago, which was Space Jam 2.
Yeah,
you know, so they have hired the right people to make these movies apparently, but they don't have the confidence in themselves that they can make money with it. But
so
Ketchup Entertainment can
make money off of it.
Yeah, but Ketchup Entertainment can.
We'd have to know how much they bought.
But you're telling me that you can't find, you know, McDonald's or Burger King or Taco Bell or whoever to put out the toys to go with this movie to do a, you know, $40 million Happy Meal deal?
See, that's what I'm interested in, and that's actually a great idea. Like, those are the kind of things that could really push it past just the theatrical run and talk about how you could monetize it outside of that. And there's got to be a billion opportunities that you could be able to do it.
Why so am I not walking into Walmart and seeing a bunch of Looney Tunes action figures? You know, I mean, it makes no sense to me. You know, I can go in there and buy Disney stuff all day long.
Yeah.
You know,
do you think that there's not a clamoring for them by the youth, or do you think that if the youth was more culturally aware of them because of a better branding strategy, that there would be more of an interest in them?
Well, I don't know, but you know what doesn't help is pulling all the classic Looney Tunes cartoons off of streaming, which they did this week.
Ugh, really?
Yeah. So you cannot now go on to Max and see the original classic Looney Tunes cartoons. They're not there. You can see the more recent ones that they did when they tried to produce Looney Tunes cartoons specifically for Max. And actually, those aren't bad.
They're pretty good.
But you cannot go on there. You can't go on right now and watch What's Opera, Doc? Or,
so does it cost
you know,
them to have those on the street? Like, we've talked about this before. What is the point in pulling them?
I don't know, man. We'll talk about that a little more when we come back. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we're kind of talking about the overall state of streaming in this country. So we talked about the whole Coyote versus Acme and the fact that Warner Brothers just does not know what it's doing with just about anything these days, you know, which although apparently I guess Max is doing all right compared to some of the other services. So maybe I'm completely wrong, Jeremy. Maybe I'm completely off base. But I also don't see any content on Max that isn't elsewhere. Like, am I wrong
about that?
Like, I mean, everything that's on Max is also on HBO.
Oh, yes.
Or on, you know, one of the other related, you know, TV networks or whatever within the Warner Brothers family, or it's movies that have come down from Warner Brothers theatrical, that sort of thing. Am I wrong? Is there anything at this point that's being demanded? Well, I guess Creature Commandos was Max only. And I guess
I got one that's not exactly, it is related. Westworld is no longer available for streaming on either Max or HBO, which is crazy.
Yeah, that was one of the ones they pulled off a while back when they made a big deal about, oh, we're pulling all this stuff off. And, you know, I think it's available on like Freevee or something like that. Like a lot of that stuff they've licensed out other places.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not available on their own streaming service, which I don't get, but, you know, I don't pretend to understand. I'm sure there are good American capitalistic reasons for doing some of these things, but they're not ones that make any sense to me.
No. Apparently, they renegotiate, you know, SAG and the Writers Guild contracts every 3 years. So maybe it's just a matter of not giving people a livable wage, and that's the capitalist reason. Like, they just don't want to pay out the people who work on these things. So, like,
well,
maybe
saves
them a couple cents on the dollar or something. I'm not sure.
It's interesting you should say that, because, and I think this fall, if I remember correctly, falls under the Warner Brothers umbrella again. I'm pretty sure. I just read a story yesterday and I guess this was just reporting what Lauren Graham had said when she was on Jimmy Kimmel Live recently. And they got to talking about Gilmore Girls and how Gilmore Girls has become this hugely popular thing on streaming.
Uh-huh.
And she mentioned that she doesn't get any residuals.
Interesting.
Because Gilmore Girls, even though it's not that old a show, was made pre-streaming. So none of the agreements that any of the actors had included any residuals for streaming, because streaming didn't exist. So, you know, she made money on the DVDs and on reruns and things like that, but streaming doesn't count. So she doesn't make a penny off of, you know, the fact that that's a top 10 show on streaming right now, and she doesn't make a penny on it.
You know, I've never watched Gilmore Girls until about 2 months ago. My wife and I started watching it, and it's a really good show, but it's kind of funny that that came up that way.
It's a fantastic show, actually. I'm a huge fan. Now, she does make some money off of when they did the four new episodes for Netflix a few years ago. She makes a little bit of money off of those, because those were done after streaming came into being. But the original seven seasons of the show, nothing.
And to our broader conversation, with something like Looney Tunes, clearly there's no reason for them to pull those classic animated episodes simply because they're having to pay people. So it's like, are they trying to clear off room on their hard drive? It really just is baffling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get it, but, you know, if you're Warner Brothers, I would think you could afford to buy a few new servers.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
absolutely.
I'm getting ready to trade in my iPhone for a new model, because my storage is just about, it is full. I'm like having to delete stuff every time I want to do anything.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. So I am still on what I think an iPhone 12. I think I'm going to go ahead and upgrade to the 16, the current generation, but I'm going to go from the 64 meg that I got right now to the terabyte, because I'm not dealing with this anymore. But, you know, if I can afford to do that, and I can barely, you know, I would think that, you know, old Daddy Zaslav can lay down, you know, a couple grand for a new server.
Yeah,
just to keep the legacy of Warner Brothers alive. I mean, there's a value to that, and I mean, I can't think of anything that more is the legacy of Warner Brothers than the Looney Tunes. I mean, yeah, there's big, you know, Academy Award winning movies and yada yada. But you know what? Looney Tunes has won more than its share of Academy Awards over the years too. They've won a whole lot of Best Animated Short Oscars over the years.
Do we know how Space Jam performed? I would have imagined it did okay. I know it was one of those pandemic era movies, but like the cultural zeitgeist is at least aware through that franchise. It's strange to me. It doesn't make sense that you would just let such a valuable set of characters and IP. I mean, in talking about it strictly in capitalist and business terms, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but you and I have the conversation, I don't know, once, twice a quarter about what a maniac David Zaslav is, so it shouldn't surprise us at this point. Nothing should.
So Space Jam 2 was made for $150 million. Box office was $163.7 million. So it's, you know, you got to remember that the studio doesn't see every penny that's made at the box office, that the theater gets some, and et cetera, et cetera. So that is a box office loss. But, you know, that doesn't take into account streaming and home video and yada, 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 and all the other places you can put it.
Whatever Space Jam shirts were sold at Walmart or whatever else, you know?
And, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I could walk into Walmart right now and buy a Bugs Bunny shirt. I know I can. I've seen them.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I don't get that, and I don't get how it goes into the overall streaming strategy. But, you know, along the same lines, I mentioned, you know, I'm an Apple user. I've got my iPhone. I've got my MacBook. I'm a big Mac evangelist. I love my Mac products. Apple has their streaming service, Apple TV Plus. And story came out this week that Apple is losing $1 billion a year on supporting streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how's that sustainable? Like, at what point does Apple say, why are we doing this? And I know why. Let me backtrack a minute, because I know why they're doing this. Apple TV Plus exists to get people into the Apple ecosphere.
Uh-huh.
And try to get them on, you know, getting iPhones and iPads and MacBooks and Beats and iPods, not iPods. What do they call the earbuds? What's that?
AirPods.
AirPods. Thank you. That's the one Apple product I refuse to buy because I just can't see myself spending $200 on a pair of earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is kind of a loss leader. It's intentionally so. But I've also, you know, there's a lot of quality programming on Apple TV Plus. How much of that have you seen promotion for?
And when you talk about quality, everything that I've seen of Apple's is top tier. You know, obviously Severance is a huge cultural thing right now. When they put out regular, like, kind of more standard comedy stuff, we get Ted Lasso. Like, Apple doesn't really create stuff that I don't think has a good spot in their catalog. So to your point about being a loss leader, I think it's like they still are aiming really high so that the brand stays intact. And like you said, if it can bring you into the Apple ecosystem, then it's a job well done on their part. And even if it's not attracting like people directly to the streamer, at least they know that the product that they're putting out is like of a high quality.
But what are they telling people that they're doing? Like, Severance and Ted Lasso. Name me another. another Apple TV show that you think the general public is very conscious of.
Yeah, there's really.
I can name a couple others that have gotten some critical attention, like Shrinking. And of course, we watched, you know, the Godzilla series, Monarch Legacy of Monsters. But
The Morning Show was another one that I think had some breakout appeal, but that's been, you know, a couple years now.
But I mean, there's a lot of other series on there that have had like a lot of critical appeal that I don't think people are even aware are out there. And same thing with movies. I mean, Killers of the Flower Moon, because it got some Oscar nominations. But beyond that, yeah, they're putting a lot of money into original movies, and they may as well be released into a void.
So what is that about? Like, okay, so if Apple were to license things like Gilmore Girls, more like comfort shows that people already know that they want, they could perhaps bring in people that way, but they don't seem interested in that. Do you think that like the marketing strategy of streaming services in general is an issue?
Well, let's talk about that some more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be right back. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. And Jeremy, you posed a question right before the break there about whether I think the streaming services in general are messing up on a marketing standpoint. And I think the short answer to that is yes. And I have a couple of pieces of evidence that I will offer to this regard. So you have a few series that, you know, over the years, you and I have certainly talked about a lot that I think have definitely gained an audience in terms of the fact that, you know, they're getting on to 3, 4, 5 seasons, which there's a lot of stuff on streaming that doesn't survive more than a season or two anymore. Things like Invincible, which just completed its new season on Amazon Prime, or things like Harley Quinn, which just started recently its 5th season on Max. I haven't seen a bit of advertising for either of these shows. And I mean, you know, like, I'm, you know, pretty chronically online. You know, I watch a lot of YouTube videos. I play, you know, a fair amount of, you know, mobile games. I've got my Pokemon Go. I've got my, I've just started playing DC Dark Legion, which is a lot of fun. It's an RPG game that that just downloaded in the last week or so. You know, there are places that I would see ads. You know, even if I'm not watching traditional television or, you know, things like that, there are definitely places where I would be exposed to ads. I go to a lot of conventions. You know, I just saw a big promotion for Daredevil. So, you know, Disney's out there doing promotion for Daredevil. But I have not seen any promotion on these shows, like not even in nerd spaces.
And you answered one of the questions that I was going to ask, and that is, with the constant kind of decentralization of media, where would be the most effective place to put an ad campaign? And you just touched on a couple of them. There would be mobile games, the trades, maybe social media sites. But I know a lot of that stuff is dictated algorithmically, and I also know that the majority of the ads that I am fed via YouTube and Facebook are actually slop content, typically either geared towards mobile games or some sort of niche product that is like not a Better Business Bureau approved or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. Like, all right, so I mean, I just cited a perfect example. I knew about DC Dark Legion because I've seen a whole bunch of social media ads for it, and they drove me to the app. How am I not seeing ads for the same ads that I'm seeing for DC Dark Legion? Why are those same places not being, why is Invincible not being advertised? I actually saw an ad for an Invincible mobile game and haven't seen ads for the series. I just this morning on Heavy Spoilers saw a promo spot for an Invincible mobile game, which looks fun, and I'm probably going to download it, but they're not advertising the actual series.
A way to do it would be to pay content creators to do promoted spots for them within their content. Places like Heavy Spoilers, Screen Crush, the John Campia podcast, if they got those influencers to actually, and they do talk about the stuff. That's the thing, is like they're already kind of contributing to the marketing ecosystem. So do you think that there's a decision being made? It's like, well, if Joe Blow or whoever over here is going to be discussing this, maybe we don't need to pay for ads because the ecosystem sustains itself.
Well, maybe, but then you're relying on those streamers to continue to support those particular projects. And in the case of Invincible, like, I have not seen anything. Like, I follow a number of those YouTubers. I have not seen those videos come up in my subscribe field. And the only reason I saw the Heavy Spoilers one is because I went looking for it. I don't think Screen Crush has covered either of those series this season.
So if the algorithm isn't propping it up in a way that it's going to generate views for content creators, they're not incentivized to be able to do it. So then there's another collapse of those like marketing ecosystems.
But then the other piece of evidence that I wanted to cite here is there's this movie that has come out on Netflix recently that they spent something like $350 million to make. It's called The Electric State. And I'll be honest with you, Jeremy, you told me about it before the movie. I was like, what are you talking about? What's this movie? I had no idea this movie even existed before we started talking about it. Directed by the Russo brothers, you know, the guys that brought Endgame and Infinity War. You know, these massive, you know, the biggest money-making movies of all time. So you got these guys directing it, starring Millie Bobby Brown and Chris Pratt and Anthony Mackie and Stanley Tucci. I mean, this is the cast is star-studded. This is a movie that was released to Netflix. They spent $350 million on it. And it was like the number one movie on Netflix for like a few days. Yeah. And then like started dropping down the list below things like Kraven.
Huh.
Like people aren't watching this. And I think part of it is the reviews are not good. But the reviews aren't good for Kraven either.
Right.
So it's not just, not just that. It's that people like me don't know this movie exists. And I'm somebody that breathes pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So they're failing somewhere in promoting this. I don't know if they're just counting on, oh, well, it's on the front screen, you know, but, you know, same token, you got a show like, you know, and this is getting kind of outside the spectrum of things we normally discuss here, but the show The Sex Lives of College Girls, that I think has had some, you know, some pop culture cachet. It has gotten out there and been known. And HBO Max or Max canceled it this week. And the creator of the show came out and said, well, you know, I thought because we were showing up on their top streaming every week, you know, we were on the front screen as one of the most watched shows on the app. I thought we were safe for season four, but apparently not. So, you know, even the stuff that's getting watched within those ecosystems, is it not getting watched enough? What's going on?
Yeah, that's really it's really challenging to try to several of the things we've discussed today. It's hard to see the rhyme or reason from our perspective. You figure there's got to be some reason why they're choosing to do what they're doing, but in my mind, shave $50 million off the budget of this Electric State movie and put that $50 million into marketing. One thing I've seen shows do, like there's this show called From, and it's on MGM Plus. It's actually a pretty good show, not widely watched because everything is so decentralized now. But they contacted John Campia, and they were like, "We will give you $5,000 to make a social post at the beginning, the midpoint, and the finale of the season." That's $5,000 that they offered this guy, and he's not like a Logan Paul or a Mr. Beast or something, but he's respected within the film community. But it just makes you wonder, why not try more like grassroots marketing campaigns, where $5,000 to a creator is a whole lot of money, but $5,000 to a mega corporation, like they could do that 100 times over to bigger influencers and have those people promote the movies for them. And I just don't see why there's not more of an emphasis put into kind of bridging the worlds of influencer culture and traditional media.
To say nothing of the fact that, you know, shaving $50 million off that budget, $350 million, you could make 8 Anoras for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And still have a couple million dollars left over to promote them.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, We could talk all day about how budgets are bloated and how, you know, you look at something like Godzilla Minus One, which was an amazing movie that was made for nothing and still looked like $1 billion and won the Academy Award for special effects. You know, it can be done. I don't know what these people are doing. I don't know what the long term is here. I do think that if we don't invest in supporting some of these things longer term. I mean, think about all the classic series that started off not getting ratings. Think about like if a show like Cheers started today, it would never get to season two, or Seinfeld, or, you know, any number of these things where, you know, it's taken them a little while to find an audience. that kind
Family
of patience.
Family Guy, which is an institution to this day.
Yeah, well, Family Guy was canceled 3 times.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean, I don't know. You know, it just seems to me like there's got to be smarter people that could be running these things and doing a better job with them. But, you know, I guess I feel that way about a lot of things right now. I mean,
that's fair.
And the grand scheme of things, worrying about who's running our entertainment properties and our billion-dollar entertainment companies is kind of secondary to worrying about, you know, who's, without getting too political here, about worrying about the people that are running the world.
Yep.
So that's, yep. And that's a whole other issue that we're not going to talk about on this show. And with that, we will see you next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.